I'd prayed for a long time that God would use me and my family to impact this nation for his kingdom. That was my prayer for a long, long time. And it's in times like this where you realize what I tell people when I tell people I pray that is you can ask God to use you, but you can't dictate to him how he does it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back or welcome for the first time to Hayden Outbound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Jeremy.
You guys are in for a encouraging treat today. The theme that we have is a hope, which is something we all are in desperate need of. If you're not in need of it today, just wait till tomorrow. It's coming. So not only is it a message of hope that we have a great, incredible journey, but it's also some tactical, is that a good way to put it? Practical advice to persevere. And it's not all heavy. I think there's going to be some moments where maybe a little bit heavy today. You know, we're kind of a light show. There's going to be some moments of heaviness, but don't worry. We'll get the humor in there as well. But I'm going to get out of the way. Jeremy, we're glad to have you here today. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself and let's get telling stories.
Yeah. So, like you said, Jeremy is my name, Jeremy Powell. Born and raised in Ivinsville, Kentucky, pastored for 7 years here in Hayden at First Baptist Hayden. Spent the last 10 years up in Northwest Tennessee trying to evangelize Vol fans.
That's a tough job.
It was really hard. That orange is rough.
It runs deeper than that crimson, doesn't it? They need Jesus too.
And now headed back to the area. In that time period, God kind of gave me a pretty cool story to get to share. It all starts. Do you know about the Trader Joe's grocery stores? Down at Trader Joe's?
Got one at the summit.
I don't visit very often because, I mean, this is Hayden, remember?
You got to go a long way to get there, right?
We can't pass $3 Generals to go all the way down there.
That's right. You're not going to pass $3 Generals to go to Trader Joe's.
Come on. Well, my wife loves, and we didn't have one in our town in Tennessee. My wife loves Trader Joe's. So I had a church member call me up one day. I had mentioned that in a sermon illustration. And a church member called me up and said, "Hey, I'm going to be in Memphis." It was the closest Trader Joe's to us. And she said, can I get something for Jody, your wife? And I said, "Oh man, it's close to Valentine's Day. I'm going to score a win, right?" Mm-hmm. My thought was, you know, sticking some relational change in the piggy bank, you know, and I can do this. So she loves this smoked salmon dip that they used to sell at Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm. And so she'd love some of that. And so I was all excited. We were sitting at our kitchen table one night playing a game as a family. And she texted me, a church member texted me, said, "Hey, I'm at your back door. I've got it." So I was fired up surely your guys, you've done this. To get to my back door, I had to go through a built-in garage. It was like, kind of like we call it our game room. And there's about four steps that go down into it. And I'm kind of fired up. So I thought, I'm just going to jump these steps. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
you were excited.
I'm in my 40s, you know,
in my prime here.
I didn't think through that out of the way. And I hit the bottom and my legs just gave out. They just buckled. And couldn't figure that out. I caught myself before I fell, but it was just enough to kind of go, man, something's not weird. Yeah, it was weird. And then literally the next day, my daughter was a pitcher for the high school team in our town. So I was sitting on a bucket catching for her, and a ball got away from me, and I stood up and ran to go get it. And every step I took, my legs just got weaker and weaker and weaker. And I looked at my wife and I said, "Hey, I'm a little nervous. I'm a little scared. That doesn't seem right." And so reached out to my doctors at Vanderbilt, and I'd been diagnosed at 18 months old with an immune deficiency. So it meant my body didn't fight off bacteria and fungus like it's supposed to. So I had all these doctors literally all over the country that knew me and followed me. And so I reached out to Vanderbilt and they said, "Well, Jeremy, there's nothing we can do about it. It's the 1st of March, 2020. So we just think you probably pulled a muscle or something. We're going to give you pain meds and just kind of let it ride for a little while." And so we did for 3 or 4 months. And my back was starting to hurt and things just weren't, you know, feeling all that great. And finally in May, they got me in and they did an MRI and didn't even get to leave Nashville. They immediately admitted me, had an infection all up and down my spine. Fungal meningitis was what it was.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
They stick me in a room. Nobody can be in there with me. So I'm there by myself and it's middle of the night. And I get my phone out, which is the, you know, when you're sick, the thing you shouldn't do is Google stuff. And so I go,
absolutely not.
It was a terrible idea. So I Googled fungal meningitis and started reading about it. And they said that if you have an immune deficiency, which I did, there's about an 18% chance of survival with fungal meningitis. And so I,
that's pretty slim.
No, it ain't good. No, those are not good odds. And so I called my wife or texted my wife and I told her what I read. And she was like, first of all, get off Google.
And, step one.
Yeah. Number one. And number two, you know, just remember that we serve a big God and we're just going to, you know, do this one day at a time. And so that's how it started. They put me on some really, really strong antifungal drug and sent me home. So for the next, like maybe 5 or 6 months, I just continued to get worse and worse and worse. I didn't improve at all and still trying to pastor a church, you know, still trying to do what I do. And so we had 2 services at our church. I would get to the church. I don't know about you, but I get there super early on Sunday mornings. It's just, I really shouldn't. I guess it's kind of a bad habit, but I would get there. There's a couch on my office. And so I'd lay down because the only time I could be comfortable was laying down. I'd lay down on my laptop, you know, on my lap and work until the first service, preach the first service, go back up to my office and then lay on the couch until the singing was just about done in the second service. And I'd come back down, preach the second service and go back home and get in bed. And just, it was just a miserable time.
Pretty agonizing.
Oh my gosh. And then finally ended up having to take a leave of absence. They made me, my elders at our church came and sat down with me, a couple of them, some of my best friends in the world. And I sat down in the living room and said, well, you're not getting any better and we need you to get better. And so they put me on a leave of absence at the end of October. And that was me through the end of the rest of the year. So
I've got 2 questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, what happened to the smoked salmon dip?
Okay, so it has been discontinued by Trader Joe's.
But what did your wife?
Rip to the smoked salmon dip. No, she loved it. It was great. Like, I do feel like I did get the bonus points that I was looking for.
Yeah.
It was a little overshadowed by the fact the fungal meningitis kind of overshadowed it a little bit.
Really? Yeah,
but
okay.
The smoked salmon dip was legit, man, with some wheat thins on it. Oh, my gosh.
You did get some bonus points.
Oh,
there.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it was good.
The other thing is, this wasn't a question, but a statement. You know, the main reason I don't like going to Trader Joe's is you got to put your shoes on to actually go in there.
You do. You know? They do require something. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I do feel a little hippie-ish sometimes going in there, right? You know?
That's right. So all of that, a trip to Trader Joe's led to
fungal meningitis. Now, I want to make sure that we understand Trader Joe's didn't cause it.
This was not their fault.
No, not their fault. But they are a part of the story.
They are a part of the story.
They're not sponsoring this episode, nor are we slandering them at all.
No, that's right. Yeah, no, not at all.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
So I continue to just deteriorate and starting to fall now, just at random times, my legs, like the brain just tells your legs, hey, don't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of crash out in the living room. And I got to where I wasn't getting out of bed and losing weight, not eating. And my wife, just to be honest with you, and this is just true, just ended up saving my life at this point. She begged and manipulated and guilt tripped and everything she could to get me to reach out to our doctors at the National Institutes of Health. Mm. I'd been seen there for forever. They're the experts and
in Baltimore.
Yeah, and it was Bethesda, Maryland. Yeah. But up there. And so we reached out. They immediately got me on a plane. And by this point, my brain and spine are so filled with infection. Like my memory is kind of spotty here. Like I don't remember a lot. Like I remember parts of the trip to Maryland. But long story short, like end up having a spinal surgery to try to remove some of the infection. They can't do it. They've put in rods. End up getting to Vanderbilt, having another surgery. They put a cage in around my neck because it's just ravaging my spinal system. And the pressure that the infection is putting on my spinal cord has caused me to lose motor function. And I can remember right before getting back to the NIH, I'd made a quick trip back to Tennessee And I can remember where I was. I had people there at the house helping me. It was my daughter's 16th birthday, and they're taking me up these stairs, and I can remember this very clearly. My legs just stopped working. And I can remember, I believe I was looking at my mother and I said, why don't my legs work? And she said, I don't know.
Oh, I can't ask that.
And so they had to whisk me away back to the NIH. I get back to the NIH, and that's where we have to have this real heart to heart with these doctors. And the doctors are sitting in my hospital room. I've got two of these guys. It's a male and a female doctor, some of the most brilliant people that I've ever met in my life. And my wife is there, and I'm dying is what I'm doing. And they go, here's our options. You can have a bone marrow transplant, which we hope, if the bone marrow transplant works, it'll cure you of your immune deficiency. And hopefully then your body will be able to fight alongside the medicine because the medicine's not working. However, we only give you a 25% chance of surviving the bone marrow transplant if you decide to do that.
7% better than the...
Right, but I've got that on top of it. So 25% chance to survive the transplant. If the transplant works, then I'm still that the 18%, right?
You didn't avoid the 18.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm still the odds are just...
They're stacking up.
And I said, well, look, guys, I don't want... I mean, I'm 800 miles away from my daughters, from my family, my friends, you know, and I said, I don't want to die in a hospital bed 800 miles away from my family. And they just very solemnly said, well, we can't promise you that. And I said, well, what are my other options? The other option is we send you home and we give you, 6 to 9 months and you're going to die. Those are your options.
It was inevitable.
Nothing else to do. And in that moment, like you would think, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't. I think most people, when I tell the story, they go, well, yeah, you will go for it. But like, no, Jody, like I looked at Jody and was like, I don't know what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a follower of Jesus. You know, if I die, then, you know, I get to go be with him and that's all fine and good. But at the same time, like to be here and
still got to make a decision here.
So we decided to go through with the bone marrow transplant. And I think this is the most, I don't know, this may be the heaviest part, but like March 20th is my wife's birthday. And my daughters, they were 16 and 13 at the time, flew out to Maryland. In my mind, I guess I just wasn't connecting at all. In my mind, they were coming to wish their mother a happy birthday. But in reality, they knew that they were coming to tell me bye. They thought that might be the last time they see me this side of heaven. And to think about how as young teenage girls, they kiss their dad goodbye and turn around and walk away and get back on a plane and fly back to Tennessee, realizing that the odds are, you know, he's not going to make it. But for the next 3 months, that's where I was in Maryland, just trying to keep me alive, you know, just,
I can honestly say that is, I'm not afraid of snakes. I'm not afraid of spiders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not afraid of pigs, bears. I mean, you know,
pigs is an
pigs
interesting
was a dog one in there. That's all right. Okay, there you go. Okay.
Boars.
Well, yeah, you get that. You get this high off the ground.
You're not afraid of any of that.
Yeah,
but that is the one thing I'm scared of is leaving my children.
Yeah,
but I think it's because there's absolutely no control over whether that happens
yeah.
or not.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so we were there and went through the bone marrow transplant and 90 days after I got my new cells. So some 20-year-old German guy gave me his bone marrow. That's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean,
thanks for the bone marrow.
Thanks for the bone marrow.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't
use to buy me a Coke.
I don't speak German anymore or whatever. Yeah, but
from time to time, yeah, do you get like
just a hankering for sauerkraut?
Yeah,
no. Nine. I lost every bit of motor function. So from shoulders down, was completely paralyzed. And the depression that you get, you know, I wish I could tell you that, I mean, I'm a pastor. I wish I could tell you that, like, you know, I had all this faith in God and I don't ever think I really got mad at God, but I you know, I'm not afraid of that.
Well, you might've gotten in Job's position a little bit like, yeah. Hey buddy.
Yeah.
This,
come on. Like what's up?
Yeah.
We had video of me moving my thumb that we shared with friends and family, like, and we were ecstatic
that
I could move my thumb. I used to hate it. They put me, they made this like Franken chair for me, that this wheelchair that because I couldn't hold myself up. So they kind of had bolstered all over the place. And for my physical therapy, they would want to like wheel me around the hospital and take me outside. And I guess they thought it was a treat for me. I hated every bit of it. But like, you know, cause they just wanted
to take care of
me. Yeah. Do you want to go outside? And I was like, no, I don't want people to stare at me. Like, I'd rather just sit here and watch Wheel of Fortune. You know, like, I don't know.
Pat St. Jack is my happy place.
That's
right.
Whatever. He's my happy place. So, they made me through that. And 90 days after my bone marrow transplant, things were so good. They thought the bone marrow transplant had worked and my body was fighting off the infection, and it was time to send me to rehab. And so, I did 6 weeks of inpatient rehab at UAB, where they outfitted me for this Mondo super like chair. That, you know, power chair.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be careful. I used to call it an electric chair, and that's not the right thing.
No,
but it's power chair. And I couldn't even control it. I couldn't even put my hand up on the controller to control it. So I had a straw. I had a sip and puff controller, like mm-hmm. Stephen Hawking, you know, and I could blow into it and make it go forward or turn or whatever. And you had to learn how to do all of that, and ran into a couple of walls trying to figure that out, you know. And but that was how I was planning. That's how we were planning on getting around. The doctors were literally telling my wife, you need to, and we did, you need to overhaul your house. It needs to be ready. Like, he's going to need 24-hour care. That's what's going to happen.
My grandmother had a stroke. She was probably early 70s, mm-hmm. and it changed her life, like you're talking about. And we thought she needed electric chair.
It's easy to say. I get
we
it.
We thought she needed power chair, right? It was a hover round. We kept seeing these commercials
for a rascal.
Hover round.
Do you remember Rascal?
Rascal, yes. So, and here, let me step back a little bit. I don't think it was our idea. She had seen the commercial on TV. Yeah.
Power marketing.
She was target market, right? And I come in one day and she said, Jane, she said, I want one of them huzzy rounds.
Huzzy rounds.
I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I will do anything in my power to get what you want, Nanny, but I don't know what you're asking for. She said, yeah, you do one of them chairs, one of them huzzy rounds. I said, a hover round is what you like. Yeah, that's what I want. Well, I said, hey, that's a great idea. You know, that'd be probably beneficial. Well, anything, you've been in my house. That was my grandmother's house before. If you've been in there, it's a shotgun, like it's shotgun style house. Mm-hmm. It was built in very early 50s and then added onto, but you know, you got a straight
mm-hmm.
three doors that you go in and right out the back.
Yeah.
So you got one way in and one way out. That's it. You don't get a lot of hallway and all. So we got her a hover round. She gets on that thing. She rearranges the furniture in the living room.
Okay.
With it.
Like just pushes stuff with
pushing
it?
Pushing it with the chair.
Yes.
And she would get so tickled about, because she would just stay in her. I mean, she would go forward and we'd be hollering, get out of her, get it. Yeah. And she'd be laughing and cackling
reverse,
and pushing.
Terry. Yeah.
Back up, Terry. No, she's going forward and she's plowing chairs into the wall and just laughing about it.
Oh, yeah.
So she finally got it all put, everything pushed to the wall, and she could just run around in a circle.
Throw a donut in the middle
of that. Throw a donut in the middle of that. Man, but we laughed at her and her huzzy round, the huzzy round.
That's
buddy.
Hilarious. Now, I told Jody if we could put a, like a Swiffer on the front of my, like a bulldozer, I could do the floor.
You could get the floor stuff.
Did she take you up on that?
No,
that seems like
no.
something she might would have. Yeah. Hey, that is a great idea.
See, I think there's
a market there.
The entrepreneur in me is coming out. You know,
you may have gotten your desire for the skid steer operation from your grandma. It sounds like she would have loved liked the hover round. Yeah. She would have loved the skid steer.
She can push a lot of furniture with that.
Rearranged a lot of things.
Your whole property would have been different.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's so good.
Yep, that reminded me of that. I hadn't thought about Nanny and the huzzy round in a long time. Yeah. But we finally had to. This is like, okay, this is probably more of a hazard than
Yeah. Than a helmet. No, I discovered pretty early. I used to like, because it still had the hand control on my chair. And so like toddlers at church, you know, I'd be like, hey, you want to drive the chair? And I got ran into a couple tables and we finally said, that may not be the best idea.
I bet if you sneezed with a little blow straw using a mask.
That's going to wheelie.
That's right. No, that's turbo mode. That's like hitting the nitrous button. Yeah, on a race
that would
car.
Be the 5K mode.
No, absolutely. No, you haven't seen anything until the people in the neighborhood thought it was great. We'd have a dog. One of my dogs get loose in the neighborhood, and I just go down the road in my chair. You know,
I'll get it.
Yeah, that's right. Me and 6.4 miles an hour, just heading straight down
just
the road,
getting after it, boy.
Yeah. You could have been a sure enough professional dog walker, though. I mean, that's where you should have.
There you go, man. You know what? I missed out on that opportunity. Good grief.
Looking back.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm glad we got through that, though. Yeah. Here we are. We're obviously not in,
in a power chair. So. Yeah, well, yeah. My wife told me when we moved here, the power chair couldn't come in the house. That was the rule. And
Wait a minute. I got to do something different.
Yeah, that's right. So
how did it all return? That's where I'm at.
Yeah. So
you're at a straw. So you're not at a straw anymore.
I'm at a straw. Yeah. So that's kind of where I was. I needed 24-hour care. And I came home the week of Thanksgiving, 2021. So a little over a year after I took my leave of absence at the church, and no longer had my immune deficiency. It was cured. The fungal meningitis had cleared, but I was completely paralyzed. And that's where you go, man. I don't know. You know, you read the stories of the paralytics in scripture and you read them with a whole new light, right? In this case,
yeah,
right?
I can't imagine.
And, you know, you think about the man at the pool of Bethesda when he's like, yeah, I want to be healed.
I'd love to get in
no
there.
No one can help me in there. Like, and everything I had to do, someone had to help me. I just don't know that people get how demoralizing and emasculating it is to say to your daughter, hey, can you come scratch my nose because it itches because you can't do it, or to have somebody help you bathe and shower and go to the bathroom and eat. They have to feed you. I'm so grateful for everybody that served me, but like I joke now, I ate a lot of lukewarm food. Because people are feeding themselves and they have to stop and feed me. And I would always feel bad, be like, hey, can you stick that in the microwave or whatever? Like, you know, so you just eat what you can. And I had no appetite and it was just crazy. And to lay in bed at the story I tell, you know, you lay in bed at night and you're awake and you stare at the ceiling and you go, I'm hot. I wish I could take my hands out from under the covers and put them on top of the covers. But to do that, I'm going to have to wake my wife up to do that for me. Or you wake up in the middle of the night, you got to go to the bathroom and you have to wake up your wife to help you do that, you know, cause you can't do it. And, so started outpatient therapy and they were great there and what I loved about the outpatient therapy. And I was with them for 2 years is they never stopped trying something new. Like they MacGyvered stuff, man, to try to figure out how to get me, how to just put weight on my feet, you know, and to try to make it talk to, you know, your brain, talk to your nerves and all of that. And, slowly but surely I got my upper body back pretty well. We used to use a Hoyer lift. It's a big kind of metal thing to get me in and out of the bed and in and out of the chair. And we got to where I could transfer myself. And then all of a sudden I'm bathing myself and that sort of thing. Still need quite a bit of help, still need the chair. And my legs just weren't coming back. And, so I was laying in bed one night and just couldn't sleep. There's so much of that. There's so much just deep, dark depression that you get into. And my wife, you know, kind of fell into that as well. My kids were trying to deal with the trauma of it all and going to school and having to answer questions about your dad. And it was just terrible. And so I'm laying in bed at night and I go, you know what? I'm just going to focus on just my toes. And, you know, nothing is moving, but like, I'm just going to try to wiggle them. And so I just tried to wiggle them 10 times and I got done. And I was like, man, that feels, my toes feel tired. I wonder if those muscles are firing, you know, in there. So I was like, well, let me try my ankle. And so I would do that every night. I'd wake up and I would just start with my toes and I would just try to move my toes. And they're not moving. I'm not seeing anything move, and then my ankle and then my knee and then my hip. And I would go all the way up and all the way back down. And whenever I couldn't sleep, I would just do that. And then one night we were going through my bedtime routine. I had these big boots that I slept in and neck braces and all kinds of stuff. And Jody was getting me ready for bed. And I said, let me see if I went to wiggle my toe and it moved.
Whoa.
And I hadn't told anybody I'd been doing this. And I said, hey, look at that. And slowly but surely those nerves started reconnecting. And they had gotten this big walker where you could kind of stand up at it at therapy, and they put a gait belt on me, and my occupational therapist, a guy named Greg, he would grab the back of my belt and just kind of pick me up and hold me there. And my upper body was strong enough that I could kind of hold it, but he was there holding me, and they started videoing me and my recovery at the therapy place, and they would post videos for people, because there are people, you know, and I didn't know this, but there's a video of him. And he's got the belt, and all of a sudden he just lets go, and I was standing by myself, and I had no idea until I saw the video. So I was like, I got to send that video to everybody. I sent that video to my doctors at the NIH, to my doctors at Vanderbilt. I just wanted them to know that, hey, like this is what God has done, and this is what is going on. And that's to me where the hope came in. You know, I'd prayed for a long time that God would use me and my family to impact this nation for his kingdom. That was my prayer for a long, long time. And it's in times like this where you realize what I tell people when I tell people I pray that is you can ask God to use you, but you can't dictate to him how he does it. And I always thought that meant that I would pastor a church and people would come and hear me talk about Jesus and get saved and their lives would be transformed. What I didn't realize is that as I had a telehealth visit with my doctors at the NIH after I'd sent that video, and the doctor that told me only a 25% chance to survive the bone marrow transplant, that doctor came running in, grinning from ear to ear. And he said, I'm sure we've broken every HIPAA law, but we've showed that video to everybody we can show it to. Patients, nurses, doctors, your team in the ICU, your team at the transplant. And he said, and that video has been a shot of hope. It has been a shot of encouragement in their arms to know that what we're doing makes a difference. We're sharing with patients that are in situations that you were in that, hey, there is hope that can come from that. And it was in that moment where I realized, you know, none of those people would ever step foot in one of my churches.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those people are probably in a lot of ways antagonistic towards the church or towards faith. They would never listen to a sermon that I preached.
Yeah.
But they were able to see a little bit of the goodness of God and a little bit of the hope because Jody and I, through prayer and tears, were willing to say, we're going to try to endure through this difficulty rather than hit the eject button on the way out.
Powerful.
Yeah. And so over time, I've just continued to get better. I was telling y'all earlier, I had to go, they had suspended my driver's license when I got, you know, couldn't, you know, walk. I guess that's a prerequisite. And,
you can't walk.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. And so like they reinstated my license. I had to go take the driving test again, you know, which almost 30 years to the date after I took it the first time, I took it the second time.
Oh, wow.
I think what got you though, is you probably tried to blow in the straw to make it move.
That's right. Okay, I get
that. Yeah. That straw's not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you put let's put it in drive and go.
Dude.
Where's the straw?
Yeah. Dude, I'm telling you, it's funny now. It was really scary at the time. When the meningitis was racking with your brain, like I had hallucinations, like serious, scary, terrifying hallucinations. And there were times where like I would, even after I came home.
Vantage Plus. So they're general contractors. They specialize in new home construction, but also they do some dirt moving work. So clearing land, making roads. Y'all check them out. We'll make sure that we link the website and the phone number in the show notes.
Where I would try to control the bed with a straw. You know, you'd wake up and you're like, I need to raise my feet up. You know, you're blowing into
just
it like
anything to get like it.
You know, you just your brain does some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
There was a period of time before I actually got to the bone marrow transplant where I shared with Jody, like I'm scared to go to sleep because the gap between what's real and what's not was non-existent when you're asleep and you don't know. I mean, there were some scary things.
Wow.
Yeah.
You may should have wrote those down, had some movie scripts. I mean, you get some ideas that nobody could even come up with.
It's funny now when you think about it, because none of it is like, it's not even rational. Yeah, that makes it like they were fighting a guerrilla war outside of my hospital room, you know, with guns and weapons. And as long as I laid still in the bed and had my, you know, I mean, it's just silly stuff.
That was going on, but that was in your mind.
In my mind, that was actually happening. And I would be terrified. I'd wake up. I had, you know, I had a sitter that would sit with me at night, as well as Jody in the room with me. And I would wake them up and be like, hey, you know, just terrifying moments.
But can y'all lock that door?
Yeah. No, like you just don't know what's real and what isn't.
Do you remember? I mean, you still remember those, like some of those you won't ever forget.
I remember a lot of them.
That's wild. I remember talking about dreams. I had a dream when I was a kid. Did you have a reoccurring dream as a kid?
That was
like one reoccurring dream.
Still do. Yeah.
Isn't that wild? What is that? I don't know what mine was. I was a kid. I haven't had it in a long time, but I would be like kind of down in the river flat somewhere. And there would be an old truck and my Uncle Hubert's bull would be after me.
Okay.
And I would have my fishing poles and I'd be like, I'm just trying to go fishing. This bull or cow, I don't remember if it was a bull. Anyway, it was a bovine of some sort. And I'd have to go hide underneath the truck. And the cow's like running around the truck, and I'm like, I'm just stuck underneath this truck multiple times. Why in the world would I have a continuous dream about that?
I don't know.
I remember it vividly.
Hmm.
Crazy.
And I'm sure in the moment it's terrifying.
It's terrifying. You wake up, I'm waking up, like, man, there's that dream again, you know? But in the moment, it's like, I'm scared to death.
Nothing scarier than a bull on a river trying to keep you from fishing.
You were fast enough to get under the truck before he got you?
Always.
See, that's my problem. No. It is. I can't outrun them.
Yeah, my legs won't go. I think it's because when you're trying to sleep, you're trying to run literally in the bed. Oh, I can't do that.
We're getting a little sidetracked here, but that's my brother. He's not here to defend himself.
Good.
Even better. That's even better.
That's why we like it.
Okay, so my brother's wife, Vanna, come into the house one day, and she's just like physically distraught, like mad at my brother, and he's coming in defending himself, like Vanna, seriously, like what's going? And so I'm here for the show, you know. I just sit back,
where's the popcorn?
Where's the popcorn? So. They sit down and I said, what's going on? He was like, she said, your brother. And you know, I've heard that.
Right.
Numerous times. So many things.
Your brother. So I said, well, what'd you do this time? He said, I didn't do anything. She said, that's the problem. That's the problem. And he was like, Vanna, I mean, I don't know what I could tell you to like. And I said, well, take me back. Let's leave from where we're at to where obviously you're upset at him for not doing anything.
Besides him being worthless. Like, let's be specific.
Yeah. So she said, he woke me up last night. I said, okay, so you're mad that he woke you up. No, I'm mad that he woke me up because he was like doing this little move in his kicking the sheets or something. And he said, that's what I'm telling her. I was physically asleep. Like I was dreaming, and he said, that's why she's so mad. And I said, she's mad because you woke her up while you were sleeping. He said, no. In the dream, someone had broke into the house and I was defending her from this intruder. She's mad because of the effort that
he wasn't doing enough.
I mean, her honor was being defended.
Yes. His lack of it. He was saying, man, I was dreaming. Like it was not me. And she said, but if you would have saw how you were kicking.
Oh my gosh. Steven,
like,
you could have kicked harder.
Yeah.
Oh, so she was. So really the problem was the weakness.
The weakness. Yeah. He was like, it was a dream. Have you ever had a dream where you're trying to throw a punch and you're like,
slow motion. Yeah.
I'm going to get you. It's almost there. Yeah. And then I just can't make.
They could have a snack by the time you hit them.
Laughed hysterically at them. She was mad because of his lack of
effort. That's unfair. I'm going to say, Banna, if you're watching this, that's unfair.
This
unfair.
Is, but it was
I'm
funny.
I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but isn't this what marriage is, right?
That's, yeah, absolutely. It's what it's
like.
Just injustice after injustice.
Yeah. But man, so, but throwing punches in a dream are just, and so I have to, I said, Vanna, really, you, everybody's had that dream where you've tried
oh,
to.
Oh my gosh.
You just can't get there.
Yeah. Trying to jump up on something, you just can't.
You can't get there.
I am a, so beyond the weak kick, I will actually get up and travel.
You'll go, you'll leave.
You'll get up and go places.
I'm ready to travel.
It in your
happened,
sleep.
Absolutely. First time it happened, second grade, spending the night at a friend's house. And I didn't know that I did this till this time. And I woke up the next day, Saturday morning, and we've had a good time, G.I. Joe's and all this stuff the night before. And the mom comes and says, Philip, do you sleepwalk? I said, no, ma'am. She said, you don't?
Said, then we got bigger problems.
Not here. That I know of. And she said, well, okay, do you remember getting up and wanting some tea last night? She had the best sweet tea. I mean, it's memorable. Like, I don't know what she did different. I don't know what she put in it, but it was so good. Anyway, that's sidebar. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And she said, well, let me tell you what you did. She said, I heard the bathroom door shut, which is not uncommon, but you know, she's got the mom on. This is a new kid in her house. So she said she got up when she didn't hear it open again after a minute or two. And she said she went to the bathroom door and looked for the light. And she said the light wasn't on. And so she's thinking, but the door's still shut. She didn't want to go in there. Mm-hmm. But she said, I got to see if he's okay. She opens the door and she said, I was just standing there, eyes closed in the bathroom. Nothing, no other activity, just standing.
That in of itself is terrifying.
All right. So she said, are you, you know, Philip, are you okay? And she said, I just didn't respond. And she's like, do you want to go back to bed? Kind of no response, just eyes closed, just fully standing there. And I don't know if I verbalized that I was thirsty or whatever, but anyway, so I walk, eyes closed, out of the bathroom, into their kitchen, and stand in front of the refrigerator. And she said, oh, so you are thirsty. And, you know, so she said she turned to get a glass and get everything ready to give me a glass of water or tea, whatever she was going to get me. And she said, when she turned around, I was gone.
Mm-mm. Like a ghost.
Mm-mm. Like I had never been there.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And she's like, where now? Like, where are we going now? And she said she went and I was back in the bed as though I had never gotten out of it.
Oh,
she said the whole time, eyes closed, the weirdest thing that she ever saw.
I never knew you were a sleepwalker.
Well, it happened again. So I neither did my in-laws. And they had a two-story house.
Okay.
Well, I was sleeping in one of the beds up, and it had a like a balcony, open, like open living room balcony comes across or whatever. And my father-in-law was downstairs, I guess still awake or whatever hour I woke him up. Don't know that part of the story. But he said, you know, he heard me, you know, 200 plus pounds, boom, 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 walking across that. Like, what's he doing? And he didn't pay any attention. And then about that time, down the steps, and then heard the door. The handle of the door was starting to be turned, but not successfully. And so he said he got up and come around there and looked and said, there I stood, just doing my best and looked, eyes closed. No, like, nobody's at home. This is like an automated robot sitting there. And he's like, Philip, what are you doing? Philip, what are you doing? Nothing. And
no
just
response.
Turn around, back up the steps, back to the bedroom like it never happened. It's summertime. The days are heating up and the grass is growing. You don't want to spend all that time out there in your yard cutting grass. So won't you go on down to West Blunt Lawn and Tractor and see Amy and let her put you on a brand new commercial Husqvarna or Exmark lawnmower. Beyond commercial lawnmowers, she has implements such as weed eaters, chainsaws, leaf blowers, and more. Parts, service, right here in Hayden, Alabama. Located right on 160. Stop in there and see Amy today and learn how she can help you to get to enjoy more of your summer right now.
We're way off topic here, but that's some interesting.
Holy cow.
So the brain's crazy.
The brain is crazy.
You can't control it when you're asleep.
You had meningitis to it. And it'll.
And then you've then really, then you got guerrilla warfare.
You got guerrilla warfare outside your room. Yeah.
That's wild.
So take us to today.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're here at the Shetty.
Yeah.
You pull up.
Yeah.
Drove here.
Yeah.
Walked in.
Walked in. every day. It's have you ever, the way I describe it, have you ever driven a, ridden on like a bullet train, like a train that's going really fast?
No, I've seen it on TV.
All right.
Though.
So I went to Europe a couple years ago and you're on this bullet train. It's going 100 miles an hour, you know, and you look out and it doesn't seem like you're going that fast. I mean, you look out, you can see things, you can have a conversation and sit here just with you, but you're blazing down the tracks. If you were on the outside though, looking at it, you could see this train is moving along pretty fast. That's how my recovery is going. For me, it's, I wake up every day, I go through my stuff. I don't see the progress. But for people that don't see me every day, you know, they're blown away at how fast.
Yeah.
Like I said, the doctors at in Maryland, the doctors at UAB, when I was there doing rehab, they gave us no hope for there to be any recovery of nerves. That, I mean, there's a possibility, but we really don't know how much, if anything, you're going to ever get back. And so we did, we leveled floors in our house. We put in lifts in the ceiling to get me in and out of the shower. I mean, we did all that stuff, because no one knew. But like, you know, when you go from, you know, just, you know, getting around the house with your walker to like, the people at my church saw it because we put a lift in so I could get up on the stage to preach. And, you know, when
you were preaching
from a wheelchair. Yeah. So it was awesome.
That's effort.
Like, it was awesome. Like, we got this lift at the church, and the folks at my church, Crosswind Church, were just amazing. They took care of me and my family the entire time. But I would go up on the lift, and then I would wheel my chair into the center. At first, you know, with the sip and puff, and then later with the hand controls, get there. And it, of course, it made people nervous. They were like, you need like a little bumper at the front of the stage, you don't drive off. And I was like, yeah, it's probably a good idea, but no, we're not going to do that. And so, and then the day that I decided, hey, I'm going to use my walker, and I still go up the lift, but I'm going to use my walker and walk out and sit on a chair. And just the, you know, it was just such a great moment for our church, who had prayed. So many people here in Hayden and all over the country literally have been praying for me, but for them at Crosswind to watch the fruit of their prayer as I walked out on the stage with my walker and sat down in the chair, and preached. And of course I don't like it when people clap for me. I want them to give glory to God, because yeah, he's the one that has done that. And God has worked through great physical therapists, great occupational therapists, great medical professionals. He's worked through my family, my wife, my daughters, like everybody played a role in this. I was the only one that was just, I just had to get up and go do it every day. You know, that was it. So people on the outside of the bullet train see great progress. For me, it feels like it's a lot slower. Mm-hmm. But gosh, I guess it's been, we moved 1st of August here. About 2 weeks before that, and this is probably a God thing, the ramp in my van that I put my chair on and off the van in is not functioning correctly. You can do it manually, but the button doesn't work anymore. So I've taken it to a couple of places to try to get it worked out. But what that means is I have to use my walker everywhere I go. And so, you know, I tell my wife that, and she's like, well, it's probably good for you. I'm like, man, the heck with you. Like, it's a lot of work. Yeah, you know, and I tell my physical therapist that, and they're like, well, good. It means you're going to push yourself. And I'm like, the heck with you. It's a lot of work,
right,
you know?
Right.
And it is, there's times that it's exhausting, but my legs feel stronger now than they have in a really long time. Cause I literally laid in a hospital bed for a year, with them atrophying. So it just takes a long time for that muscle and tendon and everything to get back.
I just take so many things for granted.
I think we all do.
That's the biggest impact of your story right now, is just a deep conviction that I've never thought about when you said, I'm hot and I can't do anything about it because I can't lift my arms out of the sheets.
Mm-hmm. That's wild.
That you were excited to see your toe.
Mm-hmm.
I take so many things for granted.
Yeah, my little girl kicked my sheets off last night, and I snatched them back up. And I thought, when you said that, I thought, man, I Because in the moment, I was a little bit aggravated, but I should just be thankful that I can reach down and pull those sheets back up.
What a powerful. So that was 2019.
No, 2020 to now. So yeah. 2020 was when I went down really badly. 2021 is when I did the bone marrow transplant. So all of 2021, save for a month, I was in a hospital somewhere.
I had heard, being from Hayden, you pastoring at Hayden First mm-hmm. Baptist, obviously you've impacted a lot of lives here. People, you know, love you and are keeping up with you. And I had heard some of this, but I mm-hmm. had no idea.
God has been good to me. You talk about taking things for granted. I just need to tell him myself. I still do that. I have to remind myself. You know, when I, you know, last night I'm going to bed and my feet are hurting. And I, you know, and I have to remind myself, praise God, I can feel them, mm-hmm. right? Like I have to constantly battle against that because, you do, you fall into that pit where you just kind of go, woe is me. And I'm telling you, I'd be lying if I told you I don't still live in that sometimes. It is a constant battle to try to remember.
It's the human condition, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm not justifying this.
Yeah.
But I think it's the human condition to want more. Always. Mm-hmm. Never enough. Always mm-hmm. more.
That's right.
It could always be better in our mind, whatever we're conjuring up that yeah. it could be or it should be. But I appreciate you being honest.
Yeah. No, I want to be. I don't want to paint me in any kind of picture of, you know, the
oh, yeah.
holier
I'm,
than
I'm
now.
Always
no,
I'm
no,
always
no. I, it has been a struggle. And if it weren't for the faithfulness of God and the people that love me, yeah, this is kind of morbid, but like, you know, it's, you get to the dark place where the, you know, they send psychiatrists in to talk to you in the hospital, you know, to make sure your mental state is there. And my mental state was terrible. Mm-hmm. And they go, you know, have you ever thought about, you know, have you ever thought about harming yourself or taking your life? And I would always kind of chuckle internally when they said that. It's like,
what am I gonna do?
How? Right?
Yeah. I can't. What am I going to do? Run my wheelchair off the end of the stage?
I can't even drive the stinking wheelchair at this point in time. Like, like somebody had to put me in the chair. Like, it's just like, it was so bad that to not, and it is demoralizing. It is emasculating. You wonder, am I ever going to be a father to my girls? You know, am I ever going to be able to hug them again? Am I ever going to be able to just snuggle up with my wife, you know, on the couch and watch a movie? Like, will she ever think of me as a man again? Will I be able to provide for my family? And by the way, God, I had surrendered my life to serve you.
Yeah.
Right. And here I am. And I'm telling you that God just continually plants those messages in your brain. You ask me to use you. You can't dictate to me how I do it.
Chill bumps. That's
deep.
You know, I prayed for patience one time.
No. Careful.
And now you're making me second thought that one. But you, not really. I'm just sure. Tongue in cheek. But I think the message is you need to be prepared. Mm-hmm. When you make that surrender, you make a statement like that. You're saying.
Well, I've talked to folks before. I guess we talk about it in Sunday school quite often. You know, a lot of people want to prepare for the storm after the storm gets here, but there is a storm coming in all of our lives. It's just, I mean, they're different. They're, you know, it may be coming out of the north, it may come out of the east, but everybody's going to face that. But it's so much easier to try to prepare for that beforehand, mm-hmm. which you did, as you said, you had surrendered your life to God before mm-hmm. all of this, mm-hmm. you know, and so you had some basis. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the people that try to weather these storms and not have any basis at all.
I don't know how you live without faith.
Mm. No, I don't either. But I think that's the message though. You know, the storm is coming. If you're not in it, you're going to be in it. And the reality is that the way that our human nature is we want to alleviate that storm as quickly as we possibly can. But you know, Paul says, you know, Romans chapter 5, that we rejoice in our sufferings because sufferings, you know, produce perseverance, character, and character, hope. And so if you really will persevere through that, not only do you develop character in yourself, but you develop hope, not only in your own life, but in other people's lives so that they can see what it is that God's done in you. And then they can weather the storms that they see as well. So don't rob yourself of the hope by hitting the eject button. Don't rob your other people of the hope by hitting the eject button. you know, stay in that and persevere through that and watch God do some amazing things.
That's the practical piece that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And say it one more time, because I know for a fact, there's no doubt in my mind, there's somebody mm-hmm. in here that is at a crossroads, they're watching this, and they could either walk away from it.
Quit.
Mm-hmm. And or persevere. Quit. Mm-hmm. But they can persevere. So if you would, can you say that one more time?
Yeah. So what happens when you persevere through the sufferings rather than eject out is you create character in yourself. Character is cool because we want everybody else to have it. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, you need to have character,
but you develop that in yourself. And then what you do when you persevere is not only do you build hope in yourself for your own future storms, but other people that see you persevere in the midst of your storms, they can feed off of that hope, and it can help them to make it through their difficult times so that they're not hitting eject buttons, so that they're staying in their marriages, they're sticking with their kids, they're working with their coworkers, building relationships, they're pursuing Christ. Regardless of how things are difficult, they're doing it because of the hope that they're seeing in you.
That's powerful, to say the least. Well, I want to do two more things before we conclude.
Okay.
One, I want to stay with your path for just a minute.
Okay.
What's next? I know you can't predict the future, but I'm sure you're thinking about kind of what you would like. What are the next steps? So if you would just share that with everybody.
Yeah. So I think that God has given me a story, and it's a story that I want to tell. And so I'm lining up. It's really just kind of worked organically at this point. You know, getting opportunities to share it whenever I can. I spoke last Wednesday at a church down in Hueytown. I'll be speaking this Sunday Sunday, September the 8th at Gethsemane Baptist. I've got a couple other engagements coming up where I'm just going to go and just tell the story and just open up for folks to be able to hear what God's done in my life and hopefully encourage them as they're going through some difficult times. I've taken some time. I've written out the story from my perspective. My wife was very diligent about sharing on our Facebook page as we went through. Mm-hmm. And so I went through and rewrote on my website, you know, all of the story from there. And then not just that, you know, stories of growing up, there's all kinds of stories that God's given me, you know, was adopted, as a 4-year-old by my father and wouldn't know my biological dad if he fell on me and kind of my journey through that adoption process and what that looked like. And so I've written about that too. And just God has blessed me with a number of stories and adversities that I've had to kind of overcome. And so just getting an opportunity to kind of share some of that. I love pastoring a local church. And so, you know, we're talking to some churches about that, doing some pulpit supply, that sort of thing. That's kind of where we are right now. Just looking for opportunities just to dispense some hope in a world that, golly, man, needs it, doesn't it? I mean, that's really the world is a crazy place right now. And there's a lot of hopelessness out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that Jesus can bring that hope if we'll let him. So
absolutely.
That's what I'm going to try to do.
That's exciting. And you're back around the Hayden area.
We are. Yeah. We're back in North Jefferson County right now. My wife got a job at Samford University. My eldest daughter is a student at Samford University. And so we're back in the area.
All right. Not Blount County, but real close.
Hey, real close. And we're familiar with old Blount County.
Man. Well, let's end the show. Is that all you want to say about that?
I feel good. Yeah.
When we're going to put the website, if you'd like for us to do that, we'll put the website in the description so people, you can go down there and find that and read more of the story.
Absolutely.
It sounds like you
reach out. I'm ridiculously easy to find.
I am available. I make myself available.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you may have a book in the future.
People have said possibly. That. My wife is the writer. But
even better.
Buying or selling a home should be an exciting and enjoyable time. One thing can position you for the best outcome, and that is experience. The team at White Real Estate has many years of experience in helping their clients maximize their sales and secure the properties and homes of their dreams. Give Darren and Rhiannon White, Caden White, or Ryan Love a call today. and begin your journey on a pleasurable buying or selling experience.
Let's end with some, let's lighten it up just a little bit because, boy, like you said, you know it. It's been heavy. So you've been a pastor for how many years?
I've been a lead pastor for 17 years. I've been in the ministry for about 24 now.
You have to have our most watched episode is titled Confessions of a Baptist Preacher.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I've heard it. Okay.
So he listens on Spotify or Apple or something like that.
Apple, yeah.
And people have responded. They love those little stories that they've experienced along the way. Do you have one or two pastor stories you could share?
Well, I do. I have more than one or two.
Part two.
I know that you've done this for a while. I sat with a director of missions one time in my sanctuary in Tennessee, just sharing baptism stories. Of crazy things that have happened. I'll give you two examples. I'm not a big guy. I don't know if you noticed. and so the baptistry at First Baptist Hayden is one that you stand in, you know. And early on, I was wearing waders.
Oh yeah.
And the guy that had come before, I'd never owned a pair of waders, you know. And so the guy that had pastored before me was a bigger guy. I mean, he was a bigger guy. What bigger than me? I mean, and so his waders were there, and I was like, "Well, look, I don't have time to run and go buy a pair of waders. I'll just try to use him. We'll make do for the week." And I was baptizing a woman that's a little bit taller than me, which is not saying a whole lot. And I went to go baptize her. When I put her down under the water, my waders opened up, and I scooped up about a gallon of water in the waders, and. You know, I was wearing, you know, my suit pants underneath it. And as I'm praying, like she's leaving the baptistry, going to get changed. As I'm praying, I can feel the right leg just filling up with water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm, you know, you pastor long enough, you can do two things at once. And so I'm praying, you know, to God, thanking him for what he's doing. And at the same time, I'm also praying to God, what am I going to do?
Because
it's the beginning of the service.
Mm-hmm.
My wife was pregnant with my second child. So she's great with child. And she's back there helping me. And as I'm coming out, I this was, thank goodness, before we stream stuff. As I was coming out, I'm stripping clothes off. And I'm looking at her and go, I'm soaking wet. We've got to figure out how to do something. We sent a message to our music guy and we said, sing every verse of every song.
1, 2, 3, and 4. Don't leave out three.
Don't leave out the third one.
Yeah.
We've got to, because I had to, and I preached barefoot that night because I'd had no shoes or socks or anything. We found a pair of jeans somewhere and it was just stuff like that happens. And then there was a time I was baptizing another lady and she didn't tell me that she was afraid of the water, which is something that you should tell
this
your pastor.
This could be problematic.
And she also was taller than me. And so as I'm going down into the water, she panics and grabs me.
Everybody's going.
And we all got baptized, right?
And Anabaptist.
That's right. So as we came up out of the water, I was like, are you okay? She's like, I'm scared of the water. It's like, hey, we should have that conversation beforehand.
Fantastic information.
But the most embarrassing story, I get in trouble every time I say this because this story comes back to haunt me. I pride myself on thinking through what I'm going to say and illustrations. I memorize my sermons, you know.
Wow.
I know where I'm going I was preaching. This was at Hayden. So I'm sure there's somebody that's listening that will remember this.
We'll get a comment. Put a comment if you remember.
There you go. Put a comment if you remember it. I was preaching on Demetrius in Acts, and Demetrius and Paul in Ephesus. Demetrius was a silversmith, and his complaint against Paul, which I thought was kind of funny, is that this man is claiming that idols made with gods made with human hands are not gods at all, which is just kind of a silly statement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was talking about how when God creates something, he creates out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's God. This is the Latin ex nihilo, right? Mm-hmm. But when we create something, we have to make something. We have to use something to make something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as an illustration, I was going to build something out of Play-Doh. And so I had my little jar of Play-Doh up on stage with me, and I'm preaching to it. And as I'm getting to it, my brain kind of clicks in. I'm continuing to preach, but my brain goes, hey, you didn't think through what you're going to make out of the Play-Doh. Mm. And I thought, oh, that's all right. I can handle this. Yeah, it's no big deal, right? It's just an illustration. I just need to make something. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll make a snake. That's what I decided I'd do. Because anybody can make a snake.
Hell yeah. They all look
similar. Now what I should have done.
A cross.
A ball.
What I should have done was pinned a little bit off
Snowman.
Of the Play-Doh.
Yeah.
And make a real skinny snake.
A worm. Yeah.
But I didn't. I took the whole wad of Play-Doh. And I, well, you guys see where I'm going with this.
No, it's
only it's I clear. Wasn't there. Like I wasn't there.
You were so the only
I,
one.
So then I hold it up, right? I'm preaching it, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm like, see, I made this snake, you know? And I'm waving it around and and the crowd is just doing nothing. They're trying to help you. Double down. I'm like, no, you get it, right? Like,
yeah.
So I finally put it up, I move on. My youth minister, we had two services. We finished the service. My youth minister met me at the bottom of the stairs.
At first one.
I mean, he hits me at the bottom of the stairs and he goes, make a snowman. He's like, build a duck. He was like, anything other than what you just did.
Yeah.
And so that's my embarrassing moment. The funny part is when I interviewed for the job at Crosswind up in Tennessee.
Did you do this
illustration? I shared the story just like I'm sharing it with you guys. They all got a good laugh. And you know, hey, you can't laugh at yourself, right? Everybody, you preach long enough, you're going to make stupid mistakes like that. So one of my guys, good friends of mine up in Tennessee, is a big duck hunter. He's well known in the waterfowl industry. And he calls me up one day and says, Jeremy Camp is coming to duck hunt and love to have you in the duck blind with us this morning. I said, man, I'm there. So we show up and it's me and the duck blind is full. Jeremy Camp's sitting right next to me. We're chatting it up. My buddy leans forward and goes, hey, Jeremy, tell Camp about the time you made a snake.
Man.
Thanks, man.
That's why
you invited me here.
Yeah, you want to embarrass me in front of Jeremy Camp. I appreciate that.
Nah, it's all coming together.
What color was the Play-Doh?
It was blue. How do I remember that? It was blue. It could have been worse.
Because
that is now a core memory.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's there. And the world, no. I mean, listen, it was it's probably on video somewhere out there anyway. But
hey. You gotta do what you gotta do.
You're gonna misspeak. You're gonna say something. You're gonna do something crazy like that. But that's why I always tell when I talk to young pastors now that are starting to preach, I'm like, always plan your illustration. Like if you're gonna use a prop, make sure
not only what you're gonna illustrate, but how every step of that illustration.
You want to make sure that you leave nothing. You know, because gosh, it used to be the world of YouTube, man.
Oh, I know the pastor
and
fail.
That's not out there.
Do what now?
Can we find this video?
I hope not.
Everybody's looking.
Yeah,
Hayden First Baptist makes illustration.
It was over 10 years ago. Surely YouTube.
Probably not.
Yeah. I don't know. You know the pitching his tents.
Oh,
guys that, out there that, on YouTube. Yeah. Now that
and
one's
he
funny.
Just doubled down
and again.
No.
Everybody in the world's going, stop.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
enough.
The first time I was ever told that my pastor was, and he's since gone to pass. He's a good dude, man, a good pastor. But he said from the pulpit one day in one of his sermons, he said, man, y'all have really tolerated a lot over the years. He said, you know, I've called Moses Noah. I've called, you know, Adam Ricky. He said, but you just can't understand it until you're up here.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to not only speak, but think at the same time. And you're just going to, like the latest that Bethany's mad at me about, not mad at me, but you've got to fix this kind of thing is. And I don't even know why I do it because I never even do this in speech. I said, and you, because trying to relate to the congregational thing, I say, you know, what do I say? I can't remember now. It's so awkward. I can't remember, but it's like you or us and me or us and I. And she's just out there just putting her hand in her arms. Like, stop saying that. It's you and me or, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you and I.
But when you're in the moment, you don't even hear it.
Oh,
it doesn't
right.
even register.
That's right.
So I see how you did it, buddy.
Is it we and I? I and we.
We and I. Yeah, we and I. Maybe that is it. It's pitiful. It's painful to watch, and it's worse to listen to. But
do you watch yourself preach?
I have to watch myself on this so much edit these videos that I rarely have the bandwidth for any more Philip.
That's fair. They tell you, and I tell people all the time, you gotta watch yourself. Yeah. But I need to do more of it. It'll make you better.
We're gonna do a shout out. Actually, we have three today, and then we're gonna sign off. So we have three shout outs here. We're gonna be careful because we don't know if they want to be shouted out.
Okay.
But these are just they watch every
faithful
show.
Faithful fans.
Not only they watch every show and leave a comment, that's big.
Big deal.
Because it's a lot of encouragement.
I'm sure sometimes they're like, "Well, that was foul tip, boys," but they always say, "We enjoyed your show.
Love your show."
So we're thankful for a lot of people, but we want to say three this time. So if you didn't get in the shout out, it's not that we're overlooking. We just got three today. One is Terry, two is Jane, and then number three is Miss Draper.
Yep.
So Terry, Jane, and Miss Draper, thank you. We appreciate the community that you're helping us build with your comments and views. We couldn't do it without you.
That's right.
Awesome.
So, Jeremy, we're going to sign off here unless you got something else.
I don't, man. I'm good. Thanks for letting me be here.
Appreciate your time.
It was a pleasure. Well, that's going to do it for the Hayden Outbound Podcast this week. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Jeremy.
We'll see you next time.